The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, great to chat to you again. How are you? Shavua Tov.
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, and a belated Yom Yerushalayim Sameach. Of course, yesterday was Yom Yerushalayim, celebrating 65 years since that momentous occasion when the city of Jerusalem was conquered and reunified in the Six-Day World War, of course, your math is obviously a lot better than mine. 55 is correct, absolutely, 1967. Mm-hmm. Of course, sort of legendary stories that came out of the Six-Day War, but many of those seem to have been forgotten yesterday. And in the days leading up to Yom Yerushalayim, as of course we faced a rather tenuous situation, and I would say it even kind of spreads from the experiences that you had in Jerusalem, Howard, when you were here, that really the tensions in Jerusalem don't seem to have dissipated at all since that time, almost up to the present time. So for some of us, yesterday's events were somewhat surprising.
So what did happen yesterday?
Well, I think that it's important also to talk a little bit about the lead up to Yom Yerushalayim, because the decision was taken that the traditional flag march that takes place usually on Yom Yerushalayim and usually goes through various parts of the old city, including the Damascus Gate area, which has now become a location to signal, to symbolize some sort of anti-Israel protest around the Damascus Gate area, which of course leads into the Muslim quarter of the old city of Jerusalem. That Damascus Gate area has certainly become a very, very controversial location, and there was some concern about the flag march, of course being the Israeli flag march, going through the Damascus Gate into the Muslim quarter area of the old city of Jerusalem. And there was also a lot of concern about Jewish Israelis going onto the Temple Mount yesterday, which is usually also a traditional activity. And in the days and weeks leading up to Yom Yerushalayim, it was decided, A, that the flag march would go ahead, that the Damascus Gate would be part of the flag march, and there wouldn't be an attempt to somehow circumvent that highly explosive and controversial area of the old entrance to the old city. And even though there was a decision originally, I think last week, taken that Jewish Israelis wouldn't be going onto the Temple Mount, all of that seemed to change yesterday, as first of all the Prime Minister weighed in, saying that he endorsed the flag march going through the Damascus Gate and going to some highly controversial areas, even though he didn't specifically positively speak about Jewish Israelis going along to the Temple Mount. And there was a lot of concern ahead of Yom Yerushalayim that this is just provocative, that that the decisions made to continue the flag march were highly provocative, and that unnecessarily provocative, I think, was the view of some people. And there were threats from Hamas in Gaza, saying that they would respond to any attempts to somehow tread on the rights of the Palestinians to East Jerusalem. And there was some concern that yesterday was going to see a massive escalation in tensions between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. In the event, that's not what happened at all. And it's interesting to try to analyze the decisions that were taken ahead of Yom Yerushalayim, because, as I say, there are some people who consider those decisions to have been unnecessarily provocative. On the other hand, there was a view, and I think that this is a view that certainly permeated the Israeli government before Yerushalayim, is that we can't be having Hamas in Gaza dictating to us how we behave in our own capital city. There needs to be a red line drawn somewhere. To what extent are we willing to bend down to subvert ourselves to their threats and to their will in our own capital city? We need to draw a line on that and say, even if there are threats to send rockets or to respond in a certain way, we can't afford to have them laying down rules about what we do in our capital on Yom Yerushalayim or on any other given day of the week. And so this was really a battle of wills. This was really a battle between two sides trying to exert psychological advantage over the other. And I think that the events of yesterday were very much a vindication of the Israeli government's decision not to be deterred by the threats that came out of Gaza, even though there was a report of one rocket that actually was, if there was an attempted launch of a rocket from Gaza that ultimately failed and didn't go anywhere. The rest of the day, at least as far as the Gaza front was concerned, was very silent indeed. And it was noticeable that Hamas were very unwilling to make big threats, to threaten that they were going to launch rockets, to make threats of that sort that they knew they might not be able to carry out in order not to create some sort of an expectation from those people who live in Gaza about Hamas's response to Yom Yerushalayim. So if we were just to look for a moment at the events of yesterday, there were flag marches that took place that went through the Damascus Gate and other parts of the city of Jerusalem. There were thousands of people who gathered at the Kotel, both during yesterday, during the day, and the previous evening and even last night to celebrate the reunification of the city of Jerusalem. There were groups of Jews who ascended the Temple Mount and who were singing and dancing with their flags on the Temple Mount. There were reports of some people who were injured. The Israeli police came ready for action yesterday to protect those people who wanted to assert their right to celebrate the reunification of the city of Jerusalem. And overall, I think the security forces did an amazing job of protecting those people who wanted to come out. There were certainly those who came out with the intention of provoking, of going into the faces of the Arabs who were around the area. There were certainly attempts by Jews, Israeli Jews, to go into the faces of cameras, crews that had been assembled at the Damascus Gate by the Palestinian media, by the Arab media, to try and provoke them. There is no doubt that there was a certain provocative behavior, which the Israeli police seemed to take hold of pretty quickly and quite forcefully in order to prevent any further conflicts taking place around those areas. But I think overall, most of the people who came to celebrate, came to the Temple Mount, came to the Kotel, came to participate in the flag parade, wanted to do so out of joy and out of an expression of gratitude rather than out of an intention to provoke necessarily. Mm. So that is the way that I see yesterday's events. Of course, each person will see it in their own way, but that's in the way that I see the events of yesterday having taken place.
It's so interesting because to a large extent, as successful as it was, there's been tremendous damage done. And the reason that I say that is I find myself rationalizing and saying, you know, it's okay. They should be able to march because imagine stopping Americans from marching down the streets of New York with American flags on July 4th or whatever day. It's unheard of. And here we have to justify the fact that Israelis can march through the capital city on this day. And there really is a justification almost required, and we need to be given the permission to say any other country will be able to march. The citizens of that country who are proud and who adore and who love their own country are allowed to march with their own flags. It's an absurdity for anyone to tell them otherwise. Imagine, you know, a terror organization telling, you know, the Spanish you can't march through any of your cities with Spanish flags. So, but the damage has been done to the extent that we still have those discussions.
Well, I think I'm not sure if damage has been done. I think it's more about being willing to concede that in spite of the fact that the IDF so bravely fought battles in the Six-Day War in the city of Jerusalem and elsewhere, and how the IDF managed to recapture that east side of the city. We've not succeeded over the last 55 years to bring that all together. So even though the walls have come down, and even though there's been a lot of mingling of Jews and Arabs in the city of Jerusalem, and even though there is a lot of cooperation, there are a lot of positive stories to tell about what's happened since the Six-Day War. And of course, one of the most positive stories to tell is the right of the three monotheistic religions to express themselves and to pray and to visit their holy sites. That is a massive success. And yet we've still got this ongoing conflict, which we can't get rid of, and which is supported in many ways by actions of the international community, their reactions towards Israel's activities in Jerusalem. We still haven't got rid of that. Mm. And so that, in a sense, we could say, is a failure of the last 55 years, because we just haven't managed to get past that. And whether it's damage or whether it's not damage, I'm not sure, because I think a lot of damage and good is perhaps done all at the same time. But it's just a statement of fact that we simply haven't managed somehow to amalgamate the city of Jerusalem spiritually, psychologically, in addition to the amazing work that's gone on to bring it together physically. And we have, you know, these days the transport system going through all sides of the city of Jerusalem, and people visiting and people going to universities and to hospitals and shopping and living and doing all kinds of things in different parts of the city of Jerusalem. And yet we still got this barrier that we can't take down.
We don't have a lot of time, but I do want to talk to you about Iran. What's the latest in a series of mishaps that keep happening?
Yeah, I mean, the stories coming out of Iran are just never-ending. And, you know, the Prime Minister has even made comments about no immunity for the Iranian regime, sort of referring to the possibility that Israel may well have been involved in that attack that took place early last week, where Colonel Hassan Saeed Khodai was killed, was shot in cold blood, literally in the middle of Tehran. Since then, there have been quite a number of things go on in Iran, including an explosion at the Parchin military complex, Ministry of Defense building, which apparently killed at least an engineer. There were reports that two people were killed in that particular attack, which the New York Times reported involved quadcopter suicide drones. This is the way that the New York Times reported it on Friday. And it's sort of, the New York Times said that this fits a pattern of previous strikes that have been attributed to Israel. Make out of it whatever you see fit. But also there was a fire in a plastic plant in the middle of Tehran. Also, again, highly suspicious. A building that collapsed in Iran that has then generated massive protests amongst Iranian people. The latest, just this morning, is a newspaper headline where Israel is warning its citizens against travel to Turkey following the assassination of Hassan Saeed Khodai because of possible reprisal attacks that are being potentially planned by the Iranian regime. Let's not forget that when we look into the background of Khodai, who was assassinated last week, he was apparently the deputy head of the so-called Unit 840, which is considered to be some sort of a shadowy division within the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, which had been tasked with carrying out kidnappings and assassinations of so-called figures outside of Iran, including Israelis. And so this potentially was one of the reasons why he was being targeted by the Israeli forces, if indeed it was the Israeli it was Israeli forces who carried out that assassination last week. So things inside Iran at the moment are not going smoothly at all. Numerous incidents happening. The latest, of course, was also that an Iranian tanker was seized by the Greek authorities at the request of the U.S. government, only to then have the Iranians retaliate against that by seizing three Greek-flagged tankers that were sailing through the Persian Gulf, and threats against many, many more Greek tankers in that particular region. So things with Iran at the moment are very much fluid, lots and lots of activities going on, many very, very suspicious events, very much falling into our warning of Iran, check your mezuzahs, because these things just seem to go on and on and on. There seems to be a never-ending series of mishaps happening in Iran. Noticeable that Iran have also advertised their drone site, where they're housing underground facility of numerous drones that they have. And a closer look at that those drones that they have advertised makes them look awfully like certain Israeli drones. And there's been an interesting comparison done on a one-for-one basis, drawing comparison between certain of the drones that were seen in these pictures and Israeli drones that are operating. And also an interesting little zoom into a fire extinguisher that was happened to be in the corner of one of the pictures of this drone site, which apparently gives some sort of an indication as to where the site really is. So perhaps a little bit of a mishap on the part of the Iranians, giving that little piece of information away. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, but there's just so much to talk about, all this activity that's going on in Iran, and it's not going to be the last conversation that we have about it.
Absolutely. It is 8:01, unfortunately, but it's such a fascinating conversation that I just wanted to hear more. Anthony Reich, great to have you back. Thank you, as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning for the Israel Report at 7:45.